Accession number 30267, reel 14.
Yeah, that would be it.
In the 1955s. So really, your Middle East air life wasn't going too well with all these revolutions. You were in the wrong time.
That's
you?
Right.
Right. What was Freddie Laker getting up to? You were saying you had a lot of
Freddie Laker, when I first knew him, all he had was a little lock-up garage in St. Albans. And he used to buy time-expired instruments. However, he did rather well for himself, which, of course, nobody must blame him, although I was certainly surprised that he was knighted.
I suppose he was in the sort of civil aircraft business at the right time in the UK, wasn't he? Because he set up these sort of cheap flights, didn't he?
Yes, this is a lot later on.
Was it?
Yes, this is a lot later on. No, he was in the second-hand aircraft business at the time with regards to the Halifaxes. Then, soon after I arrived, I thought I had my Gemini aircraft. I thought I might get some business running owners and race jockeys to various meetings and so on and so forth.
This was in the UK?
This was in the UK. So I approached Mike Keegan of Aero Charter at Southend Airport, and he said he would like to rent my Gemini for a couple of weeks, as there was an Austrian industrialist who would like to pick it up in Nice or in Cannes. So I took the aircraft to Cannes, had agreed to hire it for the 2 weeks. I gave a couple of circuits to this Australian industrialist, who I'm bloody sure was a very good Luftwaffe pilot. However, he was a very nice chap. As far as I had no arguments with him, he was a qualified pilot, and I checked him out, and that was fine. Then I went home, and I was to be told when to pick the aircraft up, but I wasn't told at all. My wife, who was invalided in bed at the time, waiting for this operation. We read in the paper and the News of the World, I think it was.
Evening paper.
Evening news?
Evening news.
Oh, it was an evening news, apparently. I read about an aircraft went into the sea off Nice, off the runway at Nice. And lo and behold, it was Joe's aeroplane that went into the drink. Now, Keegan had sent a very, very recently qualified pilot who'd had no real experience of twins, and the Gemini was an unusual aeroplane in that you could not take off with more than a 5-knot crosswind. Otherwise you had to go the other way, with the result you just didn't have enough rudder control, with the result that I knew what had happened with the chap who went off the runway of Nice, which is quite near the water, and he ran off the runway into the water. So then I had to try to claim for the aircraft from Keegan. He offered me, I think it was £1,500, which wouldn't have bought me another aeroplane. And I went and saw a solicitor who said, well, he could keep you going legally wise for two years or more before you got any satisfaction. So I was more or less forced to accept, which I thought was another naughty thing to do. However, as I've said before, I came into this world with nothing else. And you must meet these troubles as you go along. So whilst Lucy was waiting to go into hospital, I went to the labour exchange and asked if they'd got a job for me. When they asked me what my last job was, I said I was general manager. So we can't give you a job. I said, well, don't I have to eat the same as everybody else? And eventually I twisted the chap's arm and he came up with a job at Wall's Ice Cream, packing the lorries with stacking the lorries with various ice creams from various parts of the country. And quite frankly, I think it was the easiest money I've not the most money I ever earned, but it was certainly the easiest money that I'd ever earned. I thought it was great, and it was a great fun, because I used to go to Park Royal. I used to go to the Hammersmith Palais dancing in the afternoon, and then go on to Park Royal to the Walls Company, where I worked all night, and then come home. But whilst I was there, I soon got them organised. The crews, the foreman was only interested in the lorries being loaded, and so I got talking to the crews, and I said, look, we don't need everybody to load the lorry. That's half of us work until from 8 till 12, and the other half from 1 till 5. And the foreman agreed to that, so with the result, everybody got on very nicely. Then, towards the end of the summer, I was offered a job to go with the lorries themselves, but of course I couldn't take that because it had been being away from home.
And I expect you wanted to get in the air again.
I did indeed.
And so when did your next job with the... as a pilot, when did that appear? Was this Libya in 1959?
I went, yes, I applied for a job, but they needed an American license. Oh, sorry, I needed a British license. So I went to the British authorities and asked them to give me a senior commercial on the strength of my higher American license. They refused. I said, well, you give me just an ordinary commercial license then, because this is the airline transport pilot's license that I hold, right? They even refused that. So I had to go and swat all over again to take a damn silly exam for a British commercial. Add to my problems, when I eventually got my license and got the job in Libya, all they wanted was my American license. However, it was there. So I was again flying in Libya.
So what was the situation in Libya?
Libya was at that time, it was King Idris, of course, and most of my work was flying to the various oil rigs and staying on the oil rig for 2 or 3 weeks at a time, and then come back to Tripoli, and after another 3 or 4 weeks go out again.
Well, were you taking personnel out there?
Took the all the oil companies' employees, the tool pushers and the roughnecks, as they called them, and everybody else. It was very interesting. I learned how the Americans played poker. The first two visits, I lost my month's money. But after my third visit, and subsequent many, many visits afterwards, I had the reputation of being the luckiest limey that ever walked.
Oh. Were they mainly Americans then, the oil rig workers?
Yes, mostly.
Yes. Now, what was the political situation then? Was there any unrest?
No, there was no.
Before Gaddafi's time?
No, that was before Gaddafi's time, yes. I left before Gaddafi took over. It was very interesting. There were lots of places, of course, in Libya to visit. The most spectacular, of course, is Leptis Magna, and the other one is Sabratha.
How did you get on with the no booze law? Did you manage to get
drunk? No, there was no booze law in Idris' time.
It wasn't there.
No.
Oh, really?
No, you could get anything and everything.
Oh, right. It's very different now, I believe.
Oh, indeed.
Colonel Gaddafi. Right. So why did you actually leave Libya when you did, Joe? What was the next stage of your flying career? Would this have been Nigeria?
Just one moment. Apparently, I later developed pneumonia and I was slow to recover, and I had to return to UK. My contract was due to be nearly completed anyway, I spent I later, the, whilst I was in England, I then took an endorsement on my pilot's licence it enabled me to fly on a freelance basis with Silver City Airline. That was a sort of weekend job, just flying over to Ostend and various other places. That didn't last long, and then I went look for a more permanent job. I found one with Air Safari. And I had to take both a Viking and a Hermes endorsements. Unfortunately, this only lasted a few months before the company went into liquidation. So once again, I was unemployed. I'd been in touch with Desmond Norman of Britain Norman Company in the Isle of Wight, who were experimenting with a model hovercraft at the time. I knew Desmond Norman many years ago when I was at de Havilland's. He was a pupil there. And he then asked me, would I care to go on a temporary basis to work for aero contractors in Nigeria? So that's where I went, a short time in Lagos, and I went to Kano. The Kano Club was a haven for expatriates, and I made many friends there.
What were aero contractors doing in
charter work? Charter work, you know, when people were going sick, and another occasion having to carry a coffin from one place to another sort of thing.
So would this have been in the time of the Civil War?
No, this was before then.
That happened when I moved from
Nigeria. I went to the West Cameroons. This was the job that Desmond Norman had offered me, but that was to be forthcoming, and so I. Soon left Nigeria and took up as a general manager of Cameroon Air Transport in the West Cameroons.
And that was the same sort of thing, was it?
Yes, a small, small charter company. Britain Norman had bought an Aztec and also had the use of the Fifes, Elder Fifes, banana people. They had also a Piper Apache twin, and we operated that for them. It was very interesting. Cameroons, the first extraordinary thing that happened to me, I was taken up to Buya, where we were based at Bota, and Jerry Fretz, the pilot who ran the Britain Norman's crop spraying units, took me to Buya and had a reasonable hotel, which was the main drinking place for the local bigwigs. As I entered the bar, there was a line of black-faced gentlemen sitting down, and then when Jerry Fretz introduced me to the proprietor of the hotel, a voice came out, "Joe Patient, 139 and of course, I looked over there, and there was Ulrich Cross. I think I've mentioned Ulrich Cross before with 139 Squadron in the early days. Extraordinary thing, he was out there. He was the Attorney General, and so of course it was a great night with champagne being bought by everybody. I think the also extraordinary thing that the manager André Schoofs had also I'd known from Dunmo when he'd been dropped as a saboteur. Lucy and I were invited to dine with the Prime Minister, a chap called Foncher, who wanted to develop an area known as the Amanfi Overside. It was a political move, as the commercial opportunities just didn't exist. However, one had to try to appease the hierarchy, wherever you happen to be. And I contacted the gentleman's name, but he'd been an official in the West Cameroons, and he offered to go to see if he could find a place where they could build a sufficient length of runway for someone to go up there. It was an extraordinary thing. I received a letter by an African runner who'd run, must have been at least 60 or 70 miles, with a letter from this gentleman in a cleft stick. It's the sort of thing you read about and never really experience. And they had he had located a place where they could think they could land, and said that on a certain day they would light a fire so that I could locate. I knew the approximate area and I could locate. So I did this on the, and although I was flying a short takeoff and landing aircraft, the approach, the runway itself that they had built, and was just sufficient, but unfortunately you came in over some high trees, and there were high trees at the other end of the runway to climb over. So I hurriedly wrote a note out to have these trees chopped down at either end, and then I would be able to come up in about another 2 weeks' time, sort of thing, which I did. It was a most extraordinary sight. I dropped a note to say that when I come, I would like to meet the chiefs, the local chiefs. When I eventually landed there, I was frightened out of my life. As I taxied in, I was more or less surrounded by literally hundreds of naked and semi-naked people, and I switched off rather quickly because they were getting a little too close to my propellers and so on. And I, when I got out of the cockpit, I was lifted shoulder high. It was as if I'd been some explorer or other. And then I was met with the chiefs, and one of them had an old dress overcoat, which was green, literally green with age. Another chief had a brass fireman's helmet on, and various other things. Then I, of course, through an interpreter, I had to tell them that this would only be done if I could, because the cost is such that if I could, they could produce something of commercial value to return with. And then I asked the interpreter to ask the, had to be very protocol, ask the first chief what he considered the best thing for me to bring. I was expecting medicines, matchets, paraffin, things of that nature, which have been helpful, or lamps and so on. The first chief promptly said whiskey. The second chief promptly said beer. But then it was sad, because how and why I don't know, but 3 weeks later I went up again, and there had 30 children had died through measles from that same little village. I developed Cameroon Air Transport from the one, and then I went and discussed with Britain Norman, and they eventually bought a Dove to operate between Tiko and Douala, to, because the aircraft at Tiko was the aerodrome at Tiko was too small to take any real big aircraft in, and so all the international flights that were made to the Cameroons came either through Lagos or Douala. Eventually they bought a Dove, which I went to England, test flew, and flew it out, of course, to the Cameroons. And we eventually then, after a great fight with the East Cameroon, which is French dominated, eventually I got rights to run a scheduled service.
I suppose there was a lot of opportunity at this time in that area, was there, Joe?
Yes, indeed. It was very, it was bush, I think is the expression. Mm. The job itself was often quite interesting. We'd have to go and pick up a paramount chief or some other chief from a certain place to a conference, and you'd have to land it on a road to be able to pick this up. Then you had to be very, very careful. You couldn't pick up one chief before you picked up a different chief. You had to establish their hierarchy, so to speak, and otherwise you were in a very great deal of trouble if you picked up the lesser chief first. it was crazy. However, that was the...
Then you went to Sierra Leone, I think, didn't you?
Yes, the reason... I did... on one of my trips to UK, on business trips, when I returned, I found out that my senior African staff, office staff, had been taken a rake off from the other employees. And so I went to the African director and put my case before him. Then, almost the very next day, in letters 2 inches high, "Patient must go," on the local newspaper. "This negrophobist maniac," etc., etc., etc. I wondered what on earth had happened. Apparently, the chap I wanted to get dismissed, his wife's sister was the wife of the Prime Minister. And so immediately, of course, I'd done the wrong thing. I had a word with Ulrich Cross, who was, of course, a barrister, and he said, "Well, you must take this to court, otherwise your name's finished." So I took it to court in an African, with an African judge and an African, and it was an absolute farce, because I produced photos of my children playing with African children in my house and in my garden. So where the negrophobic factor came in, I do not know. Then one of the charges made against me was that one of the Africans who turned up at Tiko and wanted to go to Douala, and I had allowed a white man to go because I instead of him. The mere fact that the white man had a ticket and he didn't seem to apply. So, so I was being prejudiced on. Also, that I had refused to employ a certain lad who could hardly speak English and who knew nothing about aeroplanes, but he, of course, was the son of one of the chiefs. So anyway, I won the case, But before the judgment, I was told before the judgment was taken that had I done any more, made a bigger judgment, I'd have owned the newspaper, which had been no good to me because I'd had to get out of the country anyway. So, of course, it cost me more than I got. Although I got damages, it cost me actually more. That I had managed to get Lucy and the family out before they got rather nasty towards me. They were very threatening towards the end anyway.
Yes, it must have been quite worrying with a wife and family then at a time.
Oh, it was fine up to that point. The thing was, the nice thing that happened, I won one of my pilots in the Cameroons I'd interviewed in London and given him a job. He had a German wife, and he turned up in the club. In the club, everybody immediately ostracized me because I was not in favour. So they presumed anybody who was talking to me would also not be in favour.
I have to close here, Joe. This is end of reel 15. End of reel 14. Reel 13 and 14 on this tape.